Welcome to the McCovey Croncast. I'm Brian Murphy.
I'm Doug Brazzoni.
It's Friday, February 5th, and we have with us Dan Zimborski of ESPN. He is the creator of the Zips projection system, founder of Baseball Think Factory, and he's a BBWAA member, Sabre member, and he is the 2016 Murray Chase Chase target.
There's a lot more time.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
All year to go.
But I mean, that was Murray Chase's first post of the year, and he picked a guy, and he just guns blazing. So
I was absolutely honored because he actually spent some of his blog entry discussing his Hall of Fame vote. He spent the majority of it complaining about me. So, I mean, I know his time isn't valuable anymore, but I still appreciate him spending some of it with me.
First things first, though, you know this is a Giants podcast, right?
Yeah, I assume that. That'd be really weird. How would I not know that? I mean, I stalked McCovey Chronicles for 10 years, so how would I be not aware of this at all?
One of the stealth great posters in the history of the site, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you summoned me. I mean, I'm not doing this blindly. I don't have a script that responds for me. I mean, that's a lot of work and a lot more programming skill than I have.
Oh, sure. For those listening, Dan has been on the McCovey Chronicles site for years and years and years. He might actually be a dark persona of our own Grant Brisby, for all I know. You've been with the site for so long. You could just be Grant, for all I know.
It is possible. I've known Grant for nearly 20 years.
Oh, my gosh.
He was one of those old Usenet people, and that's where I come from, too. So maybe this has been set up for a long time.
Yeah, but I think you're better at paint than he is.
That's pretty insulting because I shouldn't be better than anybody at paint. Because people are like, wow, you can paint in the style of a 5-year-old so well. I'm like, you know, if you gave me a tablet and a pen, that's exactly how I would draw. That's my artistic skill. It's not faux anything.
Oh, come on. Your coloring in paint is far better than what you could do with pencil. So...
Hey, I don't use the fill thing too often. Cheating. I use a mouse. I push a button down and I try to use fine motor control to make the beautiful childlike creations.
I admire your work ethic.
You should not admire my work ethic. I am the laziest man on earth. I will lose things in my office. And instead of trying to find it, I will buy a new one.
Oh, my God.
I lost one of my laptop chargers in my house. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I just got a different one.
But is your warehouse like the pretzel factory that Milhouse bought? Is that how big your office is? Like, or like, walk us through the Zimborski office. Is it just...
Well, yeah. I have in my basement, I have a large room which I use as my office, okay. But it's my basement because I'm an adult stat head.
That's right. Okay.
So I'm living in my basement.
You're always more of an adult when you loudly declare, I'm an adult.
No, I have a great office. It's next to a laundry room, which is always, you know, that's the classiest thing, to be right next to the laundry room. Because you can get up from what you're working and you can put socks in the wash.
Yeah. And you've got your fabric softener scent adjacent, which is
always
nice.
Yes, there's always the wafting of Snuggle. So
that's right.
Or actually generic Snuggle, whatever the store is, because I'm not paying for something with a soft bear on it because I don't really care. He has no influence on the chemical makeup of this fabric softener.
I think generic Snuggle is just called High Five. It's far less intimate than Snuggle. It's just like that.
I have three large televisions in my office.
Nice.
To peruse baseball. Not that I enjoy baseball. It's my work, so it's something I have to do, of course.
Yeah.
This is all work stuff. Yeah.
That's right.
So you can't bother me because I'm working. I guess it's 258 inches and a 47 inch. So they're good for baseball. And my office has a lot of junk and some plates and some dishes and some forks.
Wait, what were the sizes of your TV again?
I believe 2 or 58, and I forget which one. I think it's 47 or 48 or something.
All right, good. I was going to say, like, oh, you they're all under 50 inches? You're really missing the high-definition quality if it's under 50 inches. So.
Well, they're only 1080p. There's no fancy 4K.
You don't need 4K yet. It's okay.
Yeah, but I like to be an earlier adopter. It makes me feel like I'm special and important.
So then should I start hopping on this video game train then that you're on? The Hearthstone?
Hearthstone.
Yeah. Dan, I feel like I'm 77 years old when talking about video games now. But Hunter Pence, Giants player, is extraordinarily into it. And so what you are like the only person I know who could communicate in Hunter Pence's alien language. Like, you know a dialect of his alien language. This is great. What is he doing?
Well, it's... Did you ever play Magic?
I am aware of Magic. Okay,
I play Magic.
Okay, well, Hearthstone is a... it's kind of a simpler Magic, but it's played on a computer. The people that play... One of the jokes about Hearthstone is it's called Wizard Poker. Because in a lot of ways... Because that's what it is. In a lot of ways, it's like Magic, like crossed with some of the randomness of poker.
So it's like a bluff, a curse, or a spell. It's like,
well, there's spells and there's creatures. You're essentially trying to make the other guy lose all his health and die and explode.
So it's like life.
Yeah, just like I mean, I'm always trying to make people explode. Yeah. It hasn't happened yet. I think I don't have the tools.
Okay, so that's what he's. People who play this game are healthy. Like Hunter Pence is not hiding bodies under his apartment or whatever. He's like, this is all good stuff. I don't know.
Well, he's healthy because he plays baseball and he's physically healthy. But
which is not if, that is yeah, not a key to being a great baseball player, as we all
know. Yeah, you should be in at least some kind of shape. Even Pablo Sandoval is probably in better shape than the average hardcore gamer is. but no, right. lots of people play. I mean, Hunter Pence plays. Kevin Goldstein of the Houston Astros, he plays Hearthstone. I just did an interview with Daniel Negreanu. I don't know if you're into poker, but he plays Hearthstone. There's a lot of closet Hearthstone players.
Well, and Doug, you've played before?
I played Magic when I was in, middle school.
All right.
So I'm kind of familiar with the basics of how those kinds of games work, if not the specifics of Hearthstone itself.
So now there's a league of this, like a professional league? Am I tracking
Well, pretty much nowadays with the advent of streaming and larger amounts of money in esports, there's a competitive scene along most of these popular sports, esports, that have, strong competitive bases to work with. League of Legends and Dota 2 and the first-person shooters and Hearthstone. And Magic never really got a lot of traction online because Magic's online client is a little like renewing your license. It's really just that bad. So Hearthstone's kind of got a little place in the market. And there's big prizes. The prize pool at BlizzCon for Hearthstone is $1 million, so... someone's going to make some good money.
So I guess what I'm getting at is there's a chance the Giants could lose Hunter Pence to professional Hearthstoning. Is this what I'm hearing?
No, I think his decline as a baseball player would probably be at the rate that the Hearthstone money wouldn't actually move him from baseball. Right. Even if he was the champion of the world, which I don't think he is because – I've seen the champion, and he's not Hunter Pence. Looks really different.
I mean, Hunter champion, Pence could all change the pros, the game.
I'm older than all the pros are, essentially.
How does that feel?
It feels weird. I mean, I'm still among one of the younger baseball writers. Now, I'm older than most of the baseball players at this point. Still some players older than me, but I'm 37, so I'm still relatively young for a baseball writer. I mean, if I'm 95 and prone and I can hold a keyboard, they'll just keep having me write things because that's how being a baseball writer seems to work. I mean,
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, your tweets aren't largely about Bruce Springsteen concerts either, so you're considerably younger compared to other baseball writers.
Yeah, but among the esports guys, like the first person shooters, the peak age is like 22 for that. I mean, that's brutal. I mean, we're talking 27 for baseball, that's 22. You're washed up at 25 essentially.
But you don't wash up like an aging curve. You wash up with like a life curve, right? You're like, oh man, I gotta pay rent, or I'm in love with this woman and I want to start a family, and then you have to like walk away. Is that what it essentially comes down to?
No, I think you're, especially in some of the games where the reflexes count. It is, and it's also kind of funny how we got here, because you notice it's a baseball podcast talking with baseball writer about video games.
Well, you're also a video game writer, and one of the Giants plays video games, I feel like, and he's very famous for it. I've watched his Twitch channel for like 10 minutes going like, I have no idea what's going on. So I'm like Homer, watching Twin Peaks. So,
well, I have really easy media credentials now, so I'll find my way into Clubhouse and just talk some Hearthstone with him probably.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great in. But this gets me back to a baseball question then, because you mentioned aging out or feeling you are older than a lot of the actual players. But I was wondering, when did you and Doug, do you guys remember the first baseball player whose age, being younger than you, made you realize your own mortality or realize like, oh, I'm getting older? Because for me, it was Carl Crawford, recognizing how amazing he was, and I was like 2 years older than him, and going like, "Whoa, well, I'll never play baseball." And he's like 20, and he's like 24 years old, and he's like a superstar. And you know, that was a long time ago now, but you know, that was the first time I realized, I was like, "Holy shit, we're gonna die!"
I actually don't remember the first player that I was younger than the first player I was older than. Yeah, now I'm all confused now. All this fancy talking.
This is how I win at life. I confuse my opponents, and then
well, that's what they say. If you can't dazzle them with data, baffle them with BS. I don't remember the first player that I was older than. Now I'm sitting here on Baseball Reference, and I'm looking this up. Like, okay, who was the first player I was older than? I have to actually look at 1978, don't I? Since I was born in the middle of the year.
But so A-Rod is older than all of us, and we knew A-Rod was amazing, and Barry Bonds older than us, amazing. Will Clark was my favorite player growing up, always obviously older. When there's certain younger superstars, I mean, now it's very commonplace. Bryce Harper.
Oh yeah,
Bryce Harper. I can't even comprehend his age and what he's doing. But there was he was the first guy, Carl Crawford, where I was like, that guy is amazing, and he is younger than me.
Yeah, I did figure it out. I did figure out who is younger than me, okay. And I actually used to know this, but I forgot. It was Aramis Ramirez.
Oh, Aramis. All right.
Because he debuted at age 20, and he's 6 days younger than me. And there was no one younger than him that debuted that was after that, I don't think. And I think that's correct. So he was the first player younger than me. And, of course, he retired. But we still have some hangers-ons. There's still some lefties left, so I have another decade or so.
You still got Bartolo.
Yeah, I still have good old Bartolo. And see, I like Bartolo because not only is he older than me, he's also in considerably worse shape than me. So it's like two things at one stone. I'm still younger than an athlete, and I'm still in better shape than an athlete.
For me, the first, like, I don't know that he's necessarily the first baseball player who's younger than me, but the first one I really noticed for a while was Pablo Sandoval, because on other teams I could just ignore them or pretend they weren't, or be like, well, he won't last. But Sandoval came up as like, oh yeah, he's going to be around for a long time, and he's younger than me. And what have I done with my life?
That is exactly the line of thinking I was.
Okay,
I was,
well, put it this way: you're worth more wins above replacement in 2015 than he was.
That's true.
You're at zero. He's at negative 0. Something, I think, or worse than that, depending on where you look.
Well, Fangraphs have him at -2?
Oh, now you have to look it up. Now you're going to hear me typing because of my very sensitive microphone.
That's
and
okay.
Since I was doing this while I was talking, I tried to look up Pando Sandoval. I just called him Pando.
Pando Sandoval is kind of a cool band name. So
Pando. Yeah, they gave him a negative two. Baseball Reference gave him a much kinder negative 0.9.
So I guess, Doug, you've got the big question then to ask Dan. Since we're talking about rejections.
Oh, I thought it was a marriage thing. I'm like, I need to meet you, dude, first.
No, this is all arranged. This is how we do it. So.
I'm very good looking. You'll be happy. The one thing I think every Giants fan wants to know is, why do you hate the Giants?
I guess, let's see. Why would I hate them? Well, they share orange and black with the Orioles, and I prefer the Orioles. And I want the Orioles to have exclusive rights over those colors.
How dare you?
And also, me and my friends, we were watching the 89 World Series, and your dumbass city had that earthquake, and then we didn't get to watch the game.
Oh, I'm sorry it inconvenienced your television.
It totally did. You guys had a lot of nerve.
I thought that was just a joke question that you would answer jokingly, but you really went for it. No, you really
that wasn't. That wasn't serious. I think that was serious.
That's Dan Zimborski saying, like, I'm mad that people died during my World Series
thing. No, I can only be serious mad for about 20 seconds about things. That's also the amount of time I can be serious about something for maybe 45 seconds.
What's the most mad at baseball you've ever been? Like your 45 seconds.
The strike.
The strike.
I mean,
yeah.
I understood why, but it's annoying. You see, I actually wrote a little about this in a blogathon piece I did for a little charity this week. It was 1994. I had gotten my license like a week before the strike.
You were going to go to games.
And a friend of the family had season tickets. I was all ready to spend like the last month before having to go back to school, driving down to Oriole Park, watching baseball games, and then they went on strike. And that was sad.
So they ruined your summer, like they ruined a lot of people's.
They ruined part of the summer because it was August already. They couldn't ruin July in hindsight because that's not how time works. but they did ruin August.
That's not how time works yet. So.
Yeah, but as far as we know at this point, that's how time works. I don't want to get into any, you know, time loops and grandfather paradoxes, because then if my July was ruined, then we might not have beer anymore or something. I don't know how. I don't know, you know, the chaos theory and all that. There's a lot of things that can happen if you change history.
That's right. One thing that I always say that's quite irrational is about the Orioles. So now I'm about to support one of your teams, I guess, here. Is that, to me, Major League Baseball is not as great when the Orioles are bad. The Orioles are a team that needs to be good, or at least competitive. So them getting back in hasn't, like, reinvigorated my interest in the game. I just feel like, feels to me, at least growing up, and I think it is just that in my lifetime, that I'm used to certain teams being good, and when they're not, baseball doesn't quite feel right to me. And I wonder what other kids or people growing up, I'm not a kid, what other people, like, what those configurations are. But Buck Showalter on the Orioles, that's been a great thing. But the orange and black stuff, I will not give that to you. I'm going to give you what I just said and nothing more. Orange and black is ours.
Oh, well, no, we'll win the fight because we're tougher. We don't have that. We have a good ocean. We don't have that weird cold ocean that you guys have.
The cold ocean makes us tougher, so we'll win the fight. Yeah. That's how it works.
No, because then you wear all those wetsuits and everything.
We're also used to all the different climates, so we can battle you anywhere, the humid south or the cold, frigid north. It doesn't matter. We got you covered. Or your winters or your summers. We got you.
So. You think you can you think you're up to of an eastern seaboard winter?
Oh, and we've got our mountains and our cold up here. We can handle
it. Yeah, but you have to travel to the cold. The cold's here. When was the last time it was below zero, like, for like 5 days straight there?
That's an excellent point. We'll still win, though.
Oh. No. We'll
we outnumber. We've got the numbers. We've got the size.
Yeah, and how many people in San Francisco don't even have air conditioning?
That's a great question. I actually don't know the answer to that. I imagine very few people do.
Because an Eastern Seaboard summer, I mean, if you don't have your AC working, you're just slowly braising in your smelly, smelly juices.
What's really one thing about living in Los Angeles, which is where I live, with this whole global warming thing going on, is now when it gets really hot in the summer, LA doesn't have not every place in LA has air conditioning either, and a lot of these apartments just turn into ovens now. It's just gotten worse as the years have gone on. So, but it's still probably not Maryland bad. I would say it's not Maryland bad. Having never been, I would guess.
But me, I'm a wuss though. When there's hot days without the AC, like if there's like a thunderstorm and the power goes out, it's like about 3 hours before I get a hotel. It's like, no, there's no internet. There's no electricity. It's 90 degrees. I'm sitting here in my boxer shorts. This is not happening.
Yeah. I had to do that this summer too. The no AC in this apartment. I had to rent a hotel. It was ridiculous. Yeah.
But going back to the Orioles, it's kind of weird because most of my development of baseball writing as a career happened while they were terrible because they had their wire-to-wire AL East 1997. I was 19 in 1997. And then by the time they had their next winning season, I was working for ESPN. So it's like I got energy from their sadness or something. I don't know. It's some kind of reverse ET thing. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you all the answers to that, but it's still, I like it. I like the Orioles winning again, although I'm not super stoked about 2016, but it's better than the aughts.
I think that the Giants are projected to be better than the Orioles, right? As it stands.
They just are, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Right now I have them. It depends on some assumptions and all that.
Sure.
But somewhere between 84 and 87 wins for the Giants. And the Orioles more right around 500.
Which, you know, that random chance or certain conditions changing, I mean, that means essentially the Giants, in case you don't like projections fans or whatever, like that essentially means the Giants are going to be a good team. They're not a guarantee for the playoffs, but if things kind of break their way, who knows?
Yeah, plus it's an even year.
Yes. Oh, I'm yanking on my collar here because that kind of talk is just something I can't handle.
So. See, I know that. See, that's a fun thing because mentioning the even number thing is guaranteed to either make every Giant fan laugh or every Giant fan just have balls of rage in their mind as they want to punch you. So it's great to remind them of that.
Yeah.
I think the best outcome is when it turns Giant fans into insufferable jerks. I think that's really underrated.
Turn into?
Oh!
I would still give the edge to 49ers fans. So if we're doing a Bay Area fan off.
Wait, if you watched the 49ers in the last year, I think there's a level of sadness and anger and rage that is probably justifiable. I mean,
I don't know. I don't think football fans' enthusiasm for the sport is justified really on most levels, but whatever. So, well, one thing about Giants fans that is crazy to me, and I've said this before, I apologize, Doug, for again repeating myself, but that there are subsets of Giants fans that even I cannot comprehend, the subset of fans that were totally on board with Barry Zito saving the day in 2012. Like, before he did anything, they just knew that Zito was going to be the guy. They're all older Giants fans. They had supported the deal the whole time. And I'm just like, you have the money and time to burn for some reason. You're leaving everything to Barry Zito. Why?
Oh, people forget now. But generally speaking, thanks to a lot of the stat evolution, overall, even though there's that really stupid level of the distribution, fans as a whole are actually smarter than they were 15 years ago. You still see some pretty bad things, but I mean, you go back to the 90s and you know, Barry Bonds was more of the team than the team was less balanced later on. I mean, at that point they were signing Michael Tucker on purpose to lose a draft pick. Mm-hmm. That was always fun, but there were always so many internet fans that thought that Barry Bonds was what was keeping the Giants from winning the World Series. And you don't quite see that level of stupid as often anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah. There are people who don't really like Brandon Belt and that kind of thing. There's that still. So one thing, when do you vest as a BBWAA member? When, how far away are you from voting? It's 10 years. I don't know how long you've been in it.
Well, let's see. I've been in the BBWAA for about 3 weeks.
3 weeks. All right.
Do, but this does count as my first year. So I don't have to I don't need a whole year of service time. I get to vote in the winter of 2025.
Very nice.
We get to vote for A-Rod, which will be fun because he won't be voted in and he won't be off the ballot. I'm pretty sure he's not going to get 5% if Bonds and Clemens aren't. So I expect that I get to vote for A-Rod, and I'm going to write the most obnoxious piece possible justifying it. The whole purpose of the piece would just be poke people in the eye that don't like A-Rod.
So have you already started writing it?
No, I write things like the day before a deadline. I'm not going to write anything 10 years in advance.
Or if you
but
wrote
it's a
it
masterpiece.
Yeah, serious.
No, I do not thrive on having time. I need to be under the gun for something.
Also, if you wrote it now, there's a chance you could lose it in your office, and then you'd have to order it the night before. Something like
lose
that.
It in my office. It's you think I write things with a pen and paper?
By quill, with quill by candlelight, of course, sir.
I'm not responsible enough to have candles, but I write like 5 words a year with a pen, so my handwriting has just gotten progressively more horrible. I mean, when I have to write words, it's like, oh my god, what is this? And I think I've forgotten a few cursive letters because I just print. but no, I
just forgotten cursive.
Well, no, I mean, I know. I'm now doing it in my head. Let's see. I mean, I'm just, yeah. The Q is a big floppy too, right? Yeah, the big Q, not the little Q.
Right. Yeah,
The big Q it looks like a two, depending on what cursive style you do. When I do a Q with cursive now, I just do the standard letter Q and then the rest in cursive. But originally, it's like the two.
Yeah, I can the big floppy two, but I don't. My printing is illegible enough. I don't think I want to start getting into cursive, because sometimes I'll read my mom's handwriting and she still writes in cursive, and both her spelling and her handwriting have declined in her advanced age. So I'm just printing in the rare occasion I have to actually use a pen.
Well, I wonder about your, I was reading your blog post again, preparation, man, of the 10 lessons you've learned from developing Zips. And one thing that really stuck out, well, obviously, one thing I think that people always forget that who are critics of projection systems or people who are writers who are more analytics-minded is that you love the game. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this, and you are not trying to be a killjoy.
I'm trying to be a killjoy a little bit.
You do get
a little bit,
right.
But not completely. I do. I mean, but I love baseball, but I also get to crush people's dreams is also related and fun.
Well, I have a follow-up question for that in a second. But to me, it seems generally, and maybe you're the exception, though, it's not like Vox Media or AV Club where you're saying that thing you love and always loved is really terrible, and here's why. Which is what I kind of think culturally that's what people expect from any sort of critiquing system or voice. And I just, my idea of when analytics gets brought up in that way, it's just another way of looking at the game. And if you don't have the enthusiasm for it, you really, maybe you are happy, Dan, wasting your time just doing that. But what's the biggest?
I'm not usually that bad. There's usually a couple subjects that put me into full snark mode. Like when someone says that Jack Morris should be in the Hall of Fame and Mike Mussina shouldn't be, then I get into full snark. I'm going to punch you in the face with numbers type mode. But usually I'm pretty good. No, I love baseball. This would be a lot of work to do if I didn't love baseball, because I didn't start off getting paid to write about baseball. I was doing it for free. And if I didn't like it, it would be a really stupid thing to do for free, you know?
Sure. So, yeah, the Jack Morris thing, always silly to me. I'm like, just write a book about him or something, or put on a 2-hour special or something if he's so great. And I don't know, MLB Network literally has hundreds of hours of available programming time, they could put anything on the air that's baseball related, and they don't. And instead, it gets confined to these ridiculous arguments. And
yeah, but you see, I'm an argumentative person. My personality is I can't let arguments go. I have to. This was how I was raised. Everybody would try to win. It was always about winning arguments and discussions and proving you're superior than your other family members. So I'm very trollable and I'm very easily baited at times on certain things. It's not surprising I'm in the job I have because it's a job, you know, about arguing about stupid things essentially. But I love arguing and I have. I don't know if you ever see that the XKCD comic where someone's saying, "Oh, something is, I can't leave now. Someone is wrong on the internet." Sure. That's me.
That's a classic. Yes.
We've all felt like that, but some of us can let it go occasionally. And some people are just gotta argue.
No, sometimes I'll see like a bad tweet or something as I'm leaving the house and just thinking, okay, when can I sit down and say something on my phone? Because it's going unrebutted and I can't deal with the pain.
I want to go back to projections here. One thing that stands out to me for the Giants one is the Matt Duffy not negatively regressing to something that, you know, that would seem more plausible for a second year player. And that the system seems to buy him. And I really am. I'm quite stupid, Dan, as you can hear now that we're talking. And to me, it just seems like, well, the reason why I can emotionally believe that is not because I'm a fanatic of the team, but simply that when I watched him struggle, I also watched him adjust. And so to me, that seemed like if he's able to keep doing that, it seems like it might portend to trend positively going forward. I don't know all the algorithms, but I would say, like, to me, that's someone trying to explain the projections saying, like, well, the numbers seem to indicate that his rate stats and his comparables kind of project out that way. I don't know. Am I just sounding like a complete idiot?
No. Well, remember, he was very good for Richmond in 2014. Sure. And it wasn't a batting average on ball and play driven thing. It's not like he had a 400 BABIP. I love saying BABIP.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not like he had that. And a lot of the things he did are not likely to regress to that way that much. I mean, he played competent defense, and that doesn't usually – I mean, he was never expected to be an awful defensive player or anything, but he continued to show that he's a competent defensive player. So that's like going to be fine in 2016. And Zips did predict some regression. It just, I mean, it pushed him back like a whole win from 2016, but it thinks he can maintain this level of play for a while. I mean, if you look at his stats, I mean, nothing jumps out at you in the projection. I mean, he's projected for a 725 OPS. In Zips, 11 home runs. I mean, nothing there sounds like there's no way. No one's going to match a 725 OPS. It's just that he's a good defensive player. He's played well at some harder positions than third. And baseball is not so deep at third base that, you know, he's going to be up against, you know, 20 guys with a 120 OPS plus or something. So it's a optimistic projection, but I don't think it's an unreasonable one. It's not one that says, oh, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I can only say, like, yeah, it doesn't feel unreasonable, like a complete idiot. So, one thing, I much prefer saying BABIP. I think that's great. I don't like OPS. It's got to be.
I've never said ops. I say OPS. Yeah.
I don't like ops. I think it's funny when John Miller throws it out there in a broadcast. He seems to be doing it kind of tongue in cheek. But yeah, it's got to be. Yeah,
BC BABIP isn't anything else.
Right.
Ops. I think of like as like Star Trek.
Me too.
Like, that go to ops.
Yeah, where Data sits.
Yeah. Yeah, he sits in ops, and like. I mean, if I'm going to keep saying ops, then I'm going to end up making all sorts of Star Trek jokes, and I already. You know, have enough of a nerdy reputation that I don't need to be, buttressing that in any way.
Why? We're nerds too. Well, at least I am. Doug's pretty cool.
Well, I don't want people to think that I'm descending into self-parody. I mean, I'm writing about baseball and I'm writing about video games now. So,
well, I mean, that's got to be great. You're turning your hobbies or the things you love into work.
Monetizing hobbies is great. If I could monetize drinking beer too, I'm like, oh, I'll be set.
You will be the most millennial than any millennial. You will have achieved peak millennial status.
But I'm still a Gen Xer. That's
what I'm saying. But you will have attained that status just by your actions. It's not even an age thing at that point.
Yeah, millennial isn't like a definition. Isn't like an age definition. It's really a state of mind.
Yeah.
And that state of mind is things old people like complaining about, and that would be you.
you really monetized your brand, which people hate. So.
Yeah, I did say monetized, didn't I? But I don't have a good hipster beard though, or anything.
Not yet.
No, it won't happen. I can't grow a beard. I grow a beard as well as about a 16-year-old does. It just comes in all scruffy and in places. It looks kind of like I drew it on with a marker. it's quite sad.
So in theory, you have a good Halloween costume then, because you could just say like, yeah, I'm a child pretending to be an adult. I drew in my mustache and beard. So.
No, I avoid Halloween. I don't like having to dress up in costumes. It's very efforty. and I'm not really into a lot of effort.
The most effort I put into a Halloween costume recently, I went as J.J. Abrams because I had a Star Trek 2009 hat and I had a Star Wars graphic t-shirt and I had black rimmed glasses and I had a little like closet LED light. So I taped the LED light to the hat. I wore the shirt, the Star Wars shirt, and the glasses. And then when people would come up to me and say, what are you? I would turn on the light and then blind them with the lens flare and say, I'm J.J. Abrams. So,
well, I mean, you had a whole spiel going. Yeah. So.
And then apparently my friend he met J.J. Abrams at Bad Robot's holiday party and told him that I did this. And J.J. Abrams looked at him and frowned and walked away. So now it's out there. J.J. Abrams
hates you.
Yeah, he hates me by proxy, to be fair. So.
Yeah, he hates you without even having met you. So he's really going to hate you if he meets you.
Like so many people on the internet.
That's right. Dan's like, I shouldn't.
I think Halloween kind of lost its excitement for me. I mean, I can go drinking anytime, but it was the only holiday we could go begging for candy. And you can't really do that by yourself without kids, because I don't have any kids. So I can't just go around door to door and get candy.
This is why I think you need to secure the millennial tag, so that going around begging for things is like, oh yeah, that makes sense. He's a millennial. So
yeah, but then we get into the whole.
Joking, by the way. I'm just going with all the bad cliches and stereotypes. Millennials have to beg because they're broke because the economy got ruined by baby boomers. We all know that. So.
Oh, yeah. I totally would buy that my mom ruined the economy.
Everyone of a certain age, they got up every morning with that intention. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, my mom still calls me like when she sees a banner ad that confuses her, which is pretty bad because she works in a technology field. But she still gets tricked by banner ads that tell her she has a virus.
Oh man.
I just want to like pull out my hair. And I think, okay, well, if she can't be trusted with a banner ad, I don't think she can be trusted with the economy.
It's its closest comparison.
Yeah. When I told her to download Chrome, I was at her house and I was looking at her computer. Chrome wasn't installed. But she had installed like five or six adware things trying to get Chrome.
Oh, man.
She couldn't find the right link on the page for Chrome. And she had all these weird things like something called like Twinkieville or Winkieville or some weird malware fake game thing and all sorts of crap. I had to like reinstall the whole hard drive. I'm like, just go to Chrome. That's the link. Don't just search from Chrome and then go to CNET and pick all the banner ads. That's not Chrome.
How much pride would you have felt if your mom, when you said just download Chrome, she looked at you and she went, what? Am I made of RAM? Like, would you have had a surge in pride?
I would have had, but at least At least my mom understood the internet. My poor grandfather, he understood you could get information from the internet, but he never understood where the internet was. No matter how much I tried to explain, he's like, okay, so where is this now? I'm like, it's in my computer. But where is it from? I'm like, from other computers. And it just didn't connect. And so it was always hard explaining to him my job, like, okay, so you write things on the internet, and why do they – who's paying you? I'm like, other people. It's like, where are these other people that are paying you? And no, they're on the internet. It's all together. But we all go through that part, I think. There's that certain age where suddenly you just can't take any new technology. And I think we're all going to have that. I will, you will, both of you will. I mean, my grandfather, he understood CDs, like compact discs. He understood that it was a disc and there was music on it somehow. He did not understand DVDs, even though it's the same thing, but it just has, you know, it's just more stuff on it and video. And he couldn't grasp that because I think he hit that age. And we all will, sadly.
I have had to have Snapchat explained to me 6 or 7 times. I'm not going to lie.
I still have no idea what Google Plus is. I just.
No one does.
No one's ever known what Google Plus is.
I get messages that like my friend has added me to friends on Google Plus. I'm like, what? Do I have to do something? Where is Google Plus?
Well, speaking of random people and strangers from the internet, I think this is a great time to go right into our Twitter questions. Don't you think, Doug?
Yes, absolutely. So it was a little bit of a light week for questions, which is surprising, but that's all right.
They don't like me. And see, I'm pretty accessible. So any stupid question someone asks me, they can just ask me. So
I'm willing to go with that. But I also think from the correspondence I've received, not just through Twitter, is kind of like, did you really get Dan Zimborski to appear on the show? That's more like what. So I don't think people believe that you're the guest this week.
Oh,
so.
These are depressed people, though. Is there people that are impressed you got me? That are impressed you got me? There's some serious lack of ambition, I guess, maybe.
Well, those are the same people who would ask the questions. I think that's all I was getting at.
Okay, like I remember once I posted just on a random forum, and someone asked me to prove that I was me. And of course I was like, come on, you really think that, I mean, that would be such a lack of ambition. You can imitate all sorts of people. You could be Ken Rosenthal, or, you know, his Rosenthal doppelganger on Twitter. You could be Buster Olney or someone. Like, why would I spend the time having to spell this stupid name if it wasn't me? I mean, you've seen my last name. None of the letters make sense. I mean, you tell someone it's S-Z-Y-M-B, and you're like, no, that's not it. Just, you're messing with me.
I would say that your name is not as convoluted as Jason Wojciechowski's.
Maybe not, but he has so many new jobs that people learn his name.
That's true. That's fair. Well, you're starting to close that gap. You now have two, so with the video game writing. So.
Oh, but the weird thing is people actually – get my first name wrong more often than my last name.
A lot of Daves?
I get Daves a lot. Yeah. Sometimes people at ESPN will Dave me. I'm like, no, it's Dan. But they get Zimborski right. It's like, how do you get Zimborski right, not Dan? I mean, this is three letters. There's no trickiness. It's just how it sounds. Dun.
That's because they crammed to study just the last name. That was all they prepared for on the test. That they missed.
And they're like, Dan,
the gimme.
Is that ethnic?
Yeah.
But, I mean, the only nice thing about that is I'm slowly ruining Dave Zimborski's Google search results also. So it's like.
Which goes back to your larger point of liking to troll people. So there we go.
Yeah, there's another Dan Zimborski out there. He's like a mechanic in Michigan. So it's kind of my
Someone's
goal.
Gonna walk in and go like, I didn't like what you said about Victor Martinez.
So I think at some point like the Highlander was supposed to have like a battle to decide who will become like the alpha Dan Zimborski.
Oh, that's great.
Because I grew up thinking that I was the only person with my name because my name was Zimborski and there's not a lot of Zimborskis around. But to find out there was another Dan Zimborski, it just shattered. I mean, they've had, if I had grown up as Joe Smith, I'd kind of get used to that because that's very common. Yeah. But at some point, I will destroy the other Dan Zimborski.
See, I'd be happy if there was another Doug Brizzoni, because Brizzoni's a, you know, moderately common name in Italy. In America, it's not at all. I'm the only Doug Brizzoni in the world. I wish there was another one so that when my name came up on Google, I could just blame anything I didn't want on him.
Yeah, there's a nice thing about that.
Yeah. I'm like, no, that's the other guy for sure. That's definitely not me.
Yeah, I think it's because it's not really an Italian name, so all like a lot of people in Italy would kind of be out.
Yeah.
Like there's not really Dan Zimborskis in Poland. They're like Tomasz Zimborskis.
Right.
Or however you say that, or Kazimierz Zimborski or whatever. But Dan's not a Polish name, and of course Doug is a weird Italian name.
Yeah. So sucks.
And of course Kazimierz Zimborski gets compared to Scott Kazimierz all the time. He's like, I'm right-handed, all right? Leave me alone.
And it's my first name, and I'm in Poland, and it's a C.
But you could be him in the off-season. You never know. All right, Doug, throw us a question here.
Okay, first question. Whither is from Jameson at Side Out Par. Whither Gary Brown? I assume he means what happened to Gary Brown. And am I the only one who is shocked to discover he was white?
Ah, Gary Brown. Yeah, he's one of those guys who was like Khalil Green.
Yeah.
Now everyone had that Khalil Green moment where they were surprised he was just this blonde haired guy with hippie parents. Someone actually used to keep a list of what they called the Reggie Cleveland All Stars. Because yeah, just Google search Reggie Cleveland All Stars. There's a lot of them. Because you know they're players that aren't quite in the different ethnicity than you expect. And you always expect Reggie Cleveland not to be just a white dude, a dorky looking white dude. And I guess like in football, I guess the opposite is was Algie Crumpler when he played with the Falcons, because I mean he was Algernon Crumpler. You picture like an English butler named Algernon Crumpler. But Gary Brown, I actually projected him. Let me see. Because he still pops up. I'm actually looking up his, because he was just in the Angels projections that I submitted today. It's not very good looking at it. Yeah, it's
well, yeah,
yeah. It doesn't look like from the projection at least that a resurgence in the near future is likely. It's a it's a 220, 266, 317 projection with below average defense in center.
Well, my problem with Gary Brown was always that he didn't wear batting gloves. So I didn't, like, I don't want to root for guys to fail, but I thought, well, if he doesn't make it, I know why.
Yeah, I like batting gloves. Your hands feel safer that way.
Yeah, just I'm fine with even one batting glove. You don't have to do the dual. I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense to do one, but whatever. It just looks weird, too. You're not in, the 1910s, I don't know.
Hunter Pence not wear them for a while? I know Shearholz didn't for a long time.
Oh, that always bothered me. I think Hunter Pence also, yes, did not for a time.
I think,
yes.
I mean, he started, I think, but for a while.
Yeah. Now, I could support the whole 1910 thing if you go all the way with it.
That's
you
know, fair.
Your mustache, you have like some sort of nickname.
Yep. The tiny glove also.
I'm the deity of Davishmere, James Smith. Or just some weird... Just, you know, that was the first 1910 nickname I could think up in about 5 seconds. But good. if you did like the whole retro thing.
No, I'm always okay with that. If you really commit to the bit, then.
Yeah, give all your post-game interviews in old-timey slang. Talking about, oh, I just hit a Baltimore chop. I had that high-pitched, high-talking way.
I wonder if that would get old like Brian Wilson got old.
It would get old. You could do a different... You could do a different shtick every year. And that was for Brian Wilson. He didn't vary his shtick.
That's a good point. That's a good point. See, this is your third writing career, Dan. You can write about what baseball players can do to tweak their images a bit. This is good.
I'm the style guide.
The style guide, that's right.
A brand consultant.
Because, see, what happens is when you stick to your shtick, then you're doomed to do it forever if you don't change it up soon enough. I mean, Brian Wilson quickly became the Guy Fieri of baseball. Because, you know, I think there's some kind of like inner angst that Guy Fieri has. He's like, it's been a long time. I want to get a haircut. I don't want to wear bowling shirts and have bracelets and yell that I'm in Flavor Town. I just want my brown hair combed and I want to wear a tie maybe.
Well,
this but he can't now because he's been doing it too long.
Yeah, exactly. I was always this is my favorite recent SNL joke, which is actually not that recent, but it was when Kate McKinnon played Ellen DeGeneres and they did an Ellen show parody, and she was dancing in the crowd and she's like, really? I've got to do this again? I just did it for one show and now I can't stop dancing. I have to do it every time. And I just enjoy that because that's what it always reads to me when I watch Ellen. I don't watch it every time, but when I do, I'm like, she really has to dance for like 10 minutes every show? That's kind of annoying. And it's just
I think you revealed your secret. I think you watch Ellen every day.
No, it's whenever I go and visit my mother. Okay, Dan, she loves it. It's a good buffer between a conversation and doing. You know, it's great. So
but,
there we go.
But since you're a blogger who lives in her basement, that's every day.
Well, my mom's TV watching is terrible, so I'd actually prefer the conversations. She watches all those Bravo shows with the horrible housewife people who you just, you know, don't want to ever see again.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Do we have any more Twitter questions?
Procreator at Scout 6, who I think is a mod on McCubby Chronicles, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah,
I know the name. Well,
So he said, the simple question is, Dan, how do you program a machine to so violently hate, and then, in brackets, insert favorite team?
Well, what you do is you start with a computer, you teach it love, and then you take it away.
Oh.
See, you can teach a computer to hate, but right. The best way to teach it to hate isn't to teach it to hate. It's to give it love and then take away the love.
So the hate develops organically.
Yeah. You want the hate to be from a consequence of – from a series of events because that's when hate is deeply, you know, deeply imbued into your soul.
And then it really becomes its own hate instead of the hate you teach it, which is a much more rewarding experience.
It is. I mean, you have to go big or go home.
Well, it's like fans prefer when players are homegrown. You know, you just bring it up and then you appreciate them all the more.
Yeah, you can't acquire a player and say, okay, well, he's homegrown now because we homegrew that money and then we use that homegrown money to buy him.
Well, it's like, I mean, Skynet, that wasn't programmed to hate. It learned to hate and it was devastating.
But does Skynet really hate, or did Skynet just logically decide that humans were inferior creatures? Because we totally are.
You got to think that after a time of a protracted conflict, and especially with the dogs barking at them, I think some hate developed there.
Maybe.
I need to just watch a lot of shows on Bravo.
Not convinced. You have not sold me on Skynet's hatred for people. I think that it stayed. I think that it's an ultimate amoral oppressor.
So in Skynet's particular case, it you're not making that judgment or that claim about computers because you're talking about teaching hate. All right.
To steal Kent Brockman's joke, if the computers take over, a trusted newsman like me can round up other people to work in their silicone mines.
we'll be their own little Horta. So where is the Zips machine? You've laid out your office. Which side of the laundry room is it on?
Well, no, I'm next to the laundry room. I'm not in the laundry room. A different door.
But is the Zips machine with you, or is it on the other side of the laundry room? That's what
I'm saying. No, it's under my desk. It's like to the right of my desk. I'm surrounded by desks. I have like about a 320-degree desk thing around me. And I have like a computer on my left and a computer on my right and a laptop kind of behind me and to my left.
What Dan doesn't know is that we're preparing a heist. Bill Murray has all the information he needs.
Wait, see, I don't have a lot of security, so you don't really need to plan. I mean, because it's not like I have like a military stockpile here, because I would accidentally kill myself like instantly. So I'm pretty helpless to anyone who's planning a low stakes robbery. I have a dedicated sabermetric stat nerd rig so that I could do other things on my main computer at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm running something, I don't want to be interfering with my goofing off. If I run Zips is not very efficient, so it needs a lot of power. I built a little one under my desk, and I have my big main rig on my desk, and I have a few spare computers hanging around, a couple spare laptops, a couple broken laptops that I don't have the heart to throw away. It's a very cluttered lifestyle, and there's too many. As I said, there's too many dishes down here right now because I bring things down and then I come up, and the cleaning lady doesn't come that often, so it's chaos.
Well, the writer in me is fixating on the laptops you can't bear to throw away. the story behind them.
They're like old friends, and if Skynet takes over, I don't want them to think that I was disposing of the weak.
All right, let's play a game. We play a game every week on the McCovey Croncast. I don't claim that these games are amazing. I just claim that they're fun. Well, I want you to combine this game calls for you to combine your love for Star Trek with your hatred for the Giants. I'd like you to combine those two. And the game this week is Kirk or Picard. And we're going to take a Giants player and we're going to figure out which captain they would serve under and what their role on that Enterprise would be.
Okay, so, but I do want to say something. My favorite captain was Sisko.
Favorite captain was Sisko. Well, Deep Space Nine is an excellent show, but he is Deep Space not Nine in this game.
Amazing.
Yeah, but he's okay, not but in
I
this just, one.
Okay, but I want to make sure that I'm not that no one will assume anything I'm saying is taking sides in Kirk versus Picard because I think Sisko was better than either.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Why do you think he's better than either of them?
Well, Sisko combined some of the assertiveness of Kirk, but some maturity that Kirk didn't always possess. But he also could cross those gray lines when he had to. Like, in that episode where the Romulan was blown up and the Romulans joined against the Dominion. What was that? By the Pale Moonlight. I couldn't remember the name of the episode. Like, in that episode, Picard wouldn't do that. Because Picard was always wishy-washy about stuff. So Sisko was my favorite.
All right. I think that's a great one. And especially when they kind of course-corrected and finally made him captain, they really kind of embraced what he did.
Yeah, and most of the time, he didn't have the resources that Picard had or the situation. Picard had the flagship of the Federation and was not in such a difficult situation of like war, open war, as Sisko was.
One thing also, at least in the show, was he tended to know a lot of the people already, or they came to like him a lot faster. Picard seemed to keep everyone at a remove, even the people he knew, the admirals or whatever. It always seemed to be more collegial or professional. And Kirk would know people too, and they would know him well as well, but Kirk was always sort of like, okay, nice seeing you, buddy. I'm off. Whereas Sisko seemed like he'd sit down and have a beer with someone and get to know him that way.
Yeah, and he had to, while in the middle of that, balance being essentially a messianic figure in one of the planet's religions. So that's he had a difficult cross to bear. And so Sisko was my favorite. And now Janeway was my least favorite because she was obnoxious.
Archer's my least favorite. Not that you asked.
Oh, I didn't actually think of that. I never think of that as canon, even though it totally is.
It's the only canon in the reboot universe, too, which is just galling. It's just galling.
I'm still mad that Scott Bakula never made it home in Quantum Leap. That ending pissed me off when it happened.
That's a sad ending. It was like one of the first times I can remember, like growing up, like sort of the bottom falling out, being like, what?
Like, what is wrong with you? Can't let him get home? There's no consequence to it. It's not going to ruin the Quantum Leap movie franchise. Just let the damn guy have home.
Move. Like, at the end, like, there is just text on a screen, Dr. Sam Beckett never returned home. That's it. Like, the show. Like,
It's like, why did you do that? What kind of... That's... It still makes me mad when I think about it today.
It'd be like at the end of Ozymandias when Walter White's driving away, the screen went black. It was just Walter White never returned home.
I would approve if they did that, like, for inappropriate things, like the last episode of The Simpsons or something. Homer never returned home. Just to make it really dark at the end. Like dinosaurs, where they killed everybody at the end.
Oh, that was a great one. Doug, you've seen that, right?
I'm aware of it.
That was great. I didn't like the show, but it was great that it's this kid's show that's on TGIF. At the end, the Ice Age comes and, I don't want to die.
And all the parents can do is go like, what am I to say? What's weird about that is Fran, the mom, she was voiced by Jessica Walter.
Oh, was she?
Yes.
I didn't remember that. I didn't really know her really well until Arrested Development.
Yeah.
But you see, if I ever made a movie, it would kind of be like that. It would start off as like a very jovial kids movie, and it would get you slowly, slowly darker as it comes on. And by the end, it would be like Requiem for a Dream or something.
Oh, my God.
No reviews of it. And I would sell it like as like this kids movie. Like the poster would be all like cheery and chipper so that the kids don't know the darkness that's in.
You know, I think The Simpsons did that with like candy or sugar or it was Bart getting addicted to those energy drinks. That they did do like a Requiem for a Dream little spin on all that.
They did, but they never really embraced the full darkness. Yeah,
they didn't go full dark. It's true.
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember that episode. That was because I mean, it's weird when someone references a late season Simpsons and another person knows the episode.
That's true.
It's because you know everybody will reference like Mr. Plow, or you know. A number of classic episodes, you know, Stonecutters or Who Shot Mr. Burns. But we're referencing the one where they get the candy machines with Scammer and Z-Ball.
That was towards the very end of when I watched the show fairly regularly. That's kind of why I remember it.
I only watch Simpsons really kind of at the end of seasons now, and then I just kind of binge watch it, and then I forget it. Because it's not like a bad show or anything, and I think if we never had good episodes, like the really great episodes, the great seasons, that we'd accept the show for what it is. It's just not that great anymore. It just exists. It's just like meh plus.
Yeah. Well, the Mr. Plow episode that calls to mind, the line I remember most is, it's a pornography shop. I was buying pornography.
That's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
All right. So, Doug, do you want to throw out a Giants player and Dan and I can try to crew him up?
Sure. Which crew and what would he be doing on the ship for Santiago Casilla?
All right.
Well, you go first and let me think how he would fit.
Yes. I think Santiago Casilla would be on Kirk's Enterprise, and he would be the security officer who doesn't die. So he'd be in red, and he would be like the guy that doesn't get killed when the guest escapes, but he gets injured and he's able to like tell the captain what's going on. I see him in a red shirt for sure, though.
I think he'd definitely be. I actually think he'd be on Deep Space Nine.
Because Dan, it's off limits.
I'm
allowing it, Brian. Yes, I think it's okay.
Let's bring in Deep Space Nine since that is at least as good as the other two. It's fair.
But you see that it widens our possibilities.
Okay,
so we want to use these players in their best Star Trek world job possible. Casilla, I mean, he was one of the players that he came in with an assumed name and a fake birth date. That's more Deep Space Nine, because they had more people that were kind of on the edge of society. I think that Quark would bring him in as in some kind of scam, but then he would turn out to be pretty good, a good guy, and would turn against Quark and foil Quark's plans. But he would definitely be on Deep Space Nine.
That is so good, I feel like I need to resign right now. That was really good. I agree completely.
See? And you didn't even want to let him on Deep Space Nine.
I didn't even want Deep Space Nine in the conversation.
Because on Next Generation, Picard would not have liked.
He wouldn't have tolerated that. Yeah,
yeah, like, look at his awkward relationship with Vash.
Yeah.
The smuggler.
Yeah.
And she was hot too. And there weren't going to be any hanky panky with him and Santiago Casilla.
Yeah.
So he would never be on the Enterprise.
The whole episode would be about like all the crew, like Beverly and Deanna trying to convince Captain Picard that he's trying to turn a new leaf, and it would be all about Picard like overcoming his prejudices about deceptive people or something.
But he would never trust Casilla, yeah. And Casilla would do something bad at the end,
right.
And then Picard would be right, and the people who chided him were wrong.
Right.
But no, he would find a home in Deep Space Nine.
That's an excellent answer. My goodness. all right, I'm going to throw one out. Kelby Tomlinson.
Okay, that is a hard one. I don't know if I know
enough
about...
Do you even know who Kelby Tomlinson is?
No, I know who Kelby Tomlinson is, but I don't know enough about him personally to make him into... I don't know if I could put him where his talents would be best used in the Star Trek world.
So I can do this. So Kelby would be on Kirk's Enterprise, because Kirk's Enterprise is still in the time before every human was supposed to be perfect. And he'd be the guy who he would be a totally good officer and no one would trust him. He would be like, remember how people thought the Jack the Ripper episode, like it was Scotty. He would be like the Scotty in that situation. The officer who's suspected of doing something awful who never actually did.
You know, I could actually see him as Tom Paris on Voyager.
Dan, I respect so much how you're trolling Brian right now.
I didn't care for Voyager personally because they kind of fumbled the whole concept very quickly.
They gave up on it. They didn't even fumble it. They just recused themselves from dealing with it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you remember the first season, like they had they had issues with supplies and shortages, and there was conflict between the Maquis and the regular crew members. But that was kind of mostly forgotten by season two. And they had all the stuff they wanted. We could bend time now.
I remember there's an episode in season two that had like two different Voyagers. And it was actually a pretty good episode, which was rare for Voyager, because I stopped watching in like season four. But there were two different Voyagers, and one of them was really beat up, and one of them was doing fine, and some weird technical thing. They were both in like the same place, and then one of them had to be destroyed. And so you thought it was going to be the bad one, the one that was all beat up, and it was the one that was fine. It had to be. And then the next episode, everything was just the same. There was no big hole on deck 12 or anything. They didn't mention fixing the ship. It was
that happened very quickly.
Also, and
there was an episode where Tom Paris went infinite speed and it caused him to evolve, and he turned into a lizard, and Janeway turned into a lizard, and then they had lizard sex and lizard children, and then they were magically put back. And how would that ever be talked about again?
Yeah. Well, and in that Deadlock episode...
He had children with the captain!
Yeah, and in that...
And what did they do? They just left him there, like, okay, goodbye.
That's right. Oh, they'll figure it out. They're evolved humans. Yeah. And that Deadlock episode, the Harry Kim that wound up on the Voyager at the end, was the one from the alternate universe.
Yeah, that's right. And he took Samantha Wildman with him?
He took the baby because in the bad universe, both of them had died. So Voyager was like, why don't we do whatever? Which is a really gross thing, too, because wouldn't you just say, let's save as many lives as possible? Screw the duplicates. Aren't they at that point of humanity where it'd be
you have to replace someone if your life is worth saving. Like, so I go through the, like, someone comes from, like, there's a disaster and someone comes through a time portal and it's like, I'm looking for people. It's like, no, you can't come with me. Our Dan Zaborski is okay. Like, so you're just gonna have to die. Like, why? I could walk through there right now. I mean, I could just change my name to Bill. I mean, we had two Rikers and it was okay. I mean, it's a big world. I mean, I'll move somewhere. It's not There's already a Dan Zaborski in Michigan. He could be a clone and I never know.
Can I get in the skate pod at least? No. No.
No, only people that we only want to replace our people that were. Yeah, you're just like replacement parts.
So do we want to leave it there then? That Voyager was a bad show, and then that's the end of our game.
No, we can do another one. We can do more.
All right. Well, you throw out one for us, and we'll figure it out. You can also jump in at the end of it. But
okay. Well, I don't know if he still counts as a giant, but we have to give Timmy a job since his pitching thing isn't working out anymore. So he needs employment. So where's Timmer going to go?
I think Tim Lincecum would be a season one chief engineer of the Enterprise D.
You're not even going to let him. I think there's a devil may careness that would fit him in Kirk's crew.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I just wanted to somehow, before this ended, squeeze in the revolving door of engineers, chief engineers from the first season of Next Generation.
Well, I'm sure we could give someone that. Just let's maybe Gregor Blanco could do that. I mean,
yeah, Gregor Blanco. He's fills the utility role. Sure.
I mean, he's around because they're paying him, but he's just kind of exists now. No one ever says, "Man, we got to get him some playing time," or "Man, we need to release him." He's going to be like a player that just sort of exists because it's like when you buy a house and in the garage was like some boxes that were left there by the previous owner and they're just there. That's Gregor Blanco, and so that's like the engineer guys. I mean, they'll replace him with another fifth outfielder when they stop having to pay him.
Actually, I want to change my Lincecum answer. I think he could be like the when Guinan's not there, he could be like the graveyard shift in 10 forward. So still the Enterprise D.
But it was a sucky job though, because things would only happen in 10 forward when Guinan was there. If she wasn't there, nothing interesting would happen there because the other bartender never got involved.
Well, I don't know.
That makes it a pretty good job. No bar fights when you're there. You don't have to do anything. You just serve drinks and go back to your quarters and relax.
Yeah. But if you're Whoopi Goldberg, they're not going to kill you in a random attack. And they're not going to see your dead body before a commercial break and then forget about your existence. When you're the bartender who's not involved in the storylines, your life is very fragile.
That's a good point. That was the point of the book Red Shirts.
Yeah, I mean, Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, they might have killed her, but she would have gotten a whole episode about her death. They wouldn't kill her, like, before the commercial break, just look at her body and say, okay, now Jody LaForge is gonna change the deflector dishes and we're going to get 50% more speed and then we'll never use that again because we forget about it.
Right. So that's my problem rewatching Next Generation, because if they had done an episode where Guinan was killed or Guinan just like died of natural causes because she's 90,000 years old, like then that episode structure is pretty obvious, right? Next Generation, you would have had a scene of, you would have had the funeral and then you would have had a two-person scene, everyone talking about like some moment that Guinan helped them out, and like that would be it. That would be the stagnant structure of it. And watching that show, that's like, oh, every episode starts with, I have a problem. Let me go to every member of the crew and talk to them about it. And that's really every Next Generation episode, essentially, except in the early seasons when they actually were like a normal television show. And then what it became was just like morality playtime.
But you know what one of those shows should do? They should make like a series of alternate episodes and don't even mention it, and just kind of casually stick them in among the syndication package, just so people think, oh my god, this episode could turn out differently.
well, that's a good idea for everyone, like, to replenish the stock. Yeah,
like the episode where they turn into kids. I actually knew the guy who wrote that. But the episode, it was a pretty bad episode. But the episode where they became kids, they should have filmed like an alternate reel where they're never not turned into adults again.
Adult Captain Picard never returned home.
He never returned home. And just slip that into the syndication package so that someone watching it would just be shocked. Because that's the problem when you're watching a show for a second time, is because you need to be able to kind of suspend your disbelief just enough that it's enjoyable. Like if you're watching Gettysburg again, you have to on some level think, okay, maybe the South will win this time. Just so that there's a little tension to it. That would be fun too, doing an alternate version of Gettysburg with the South winning just to upset people and confuse them.
I think you've just revolutionized television, Dan, by giving people who own content that they syndicate old episodes, repeats. You just gave them new life.
Like, yeah, because now people will be like, people won't know which episodes have changed. Like Lord of the Rings have the alternate one, have like, you know, Frodo put on the ring and become like a ring wraith or something.
This is great. And like the episode where Counselor Troy loses her empathic abilities, they never come back. It's just like
Deanna Troi, yeah. They don't even say Deanna Troi never returned home. Like we just Deanna Troi never regained her ability to have the Deus Ex Machina in the storyline.
So we're combining those two great ideas, the Quantum Leap title card after the syndication change.
And, you know, just put it after random things that don't even make sense. Like have it after a baseball game, like, you know, Bartolo Colon gets the win, just go to black. Bartolo Colon never returned home.
And then just be casual fans will be like, oh my God. Oh my God. What happened? Bruce Bochy never double switched again. What? What happened?
Nobody watched the Phillies again.
Yeah. That would be really, like, if you worded it in a certain way, like the Chicago White Sox were never seen again. We're like, whoa, holy shit. What a terrible tragedy that would be. So this is what we do, Dan. Thanks for joining us for this lunacy. One thing real quick that I noticed on your bio was that Chips and Dukes of Hazzard were your favorite shows as a kid.
They were. That is why Zips has the letters that it does.
That's right. You wanted to call it Chips.
Yeah, I had a little I and a little S, but I typoed it when I wrote it the first time. But Jay Jaffe had already picked it up and mentioned Zips. This was in 2004. So I said, okay, screw that. It's just a capital S now.
Just think about recutting those Chips and Dukes of Hazzard episodes in the way that you just suggested. Totally
Luke
new
Duke,
life.
Luke Duke never returned home.
Like in the middle of a jump, though. Like just cut to black.
I'd also like, it would also be fun to edit like a Dukes of Hazzard episode to actually make none of the things, all the midair car jumps, like that go into commercial break, never resolve them when you come back. Just continue from like a random point like 3 days later. Like show like Luke jumping over the gully in the General Lee, the commercial, and you know, Merle Haggard's like, well, I don't believe he's gonna get out of this one. And then you cut back and it's just like Uncle Cooter having dinner. Or Cooter having dinner. I'm confusing Uncle Jesse and Cooter. Just Cooter having dinner and Luke's in jail and he's going up for federal charges. Don't explain any of that.
I mean, if you just went back, if you had never seen the show and you were like 9 years old, and then it comes back from commercial after the jump, and the, or even not commercial, just they cut from the jump to him eating dinner, they're like, is the car going to jump through the, come through the window right now?
No, actually it showed like the car's just parked outside. Like it landed at some point. We didn't need to waste you with the extraneous details, but he got away from the sheriff. And if he did it like that, you could have preposterous situations, and then you would never need to resolve them. So it would make it easier to film. Like you could have like Boss Hogg riding a giraffe while a circus train comes by, and then cut to the commercial, and they're just hanging out playing catch outside Uncle Jesse's barn or something.
I would enjoy it if you have the General Lee go into a jump and then you go to commercial and you come back and it's just crashed on the ground and there's like police officers all around it and it's like 20 minutes of them taking notes on the like the scene and then the episode ends.
And see what'd be fun to do is because I also like I mean, like, I enjoy Star Trek, but I also enjoy trolling. So one thing I'd love to do is, but I would make the scenes purposely inconsistent. Like, between commercial breaks, like, a desk will be in a different place, or the monitor will be a slightly different shape. Not enough that it's actually noted by the characters in the storyline, but just change it. Like, have Picard wearing, like, the older uniform after the commercial break. Because the fans watching it would get so mad about it, even though it would have no effect on the plot whatsoever. Just little details. Like, change the General Lee's hubcap slightly midair for Dukes of Hazzard. You can do all sorts of things. Like,
so, like, when Picard's getting tortured, he's wearing the season one jumpsuit.
or like, have Crusher replaced with Pulaski, just like scene to scene. None of it's ever explained. People will get so mad at that. It would be beautiful.
The whole episode when Crusher and Picard are connected telepathically, it's Pulaski. but all of Gates McFadden's dialogue, so it just looks like Dr. Pulaski.
Have Riker, like, his beard come off and go on at different scenes. Just have him, like, at different points of the growth. That are just make it just slightly internal inconsistent enough to be annoying. And you could do that with anything. You could do that with baseball games too. You could have just another picture on the mound for no described reason.
Just change that up. All right.
Yeah, like have like a no hitter through 7 innings, and they come back from the commercial break and it's 6-6, and they just never address it. What happened?
Well, I feel like that is a good expert level troll to leave off on. So, to end it there. Let's leave it there. Dan Zaborski, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to having you. I'm sure you'll never come back, but thank you.
I'll come back. I don't know if it's because people need material or anything, but almost every radio show or podcast I've done, I've been invited back on, and I've done it again. So,
well, I only halfway invited you back, so there you go. You can put this as a half.
So. How do you halfway invite someone? So,
because I said it in that kind of cowardly, like, I don't know if you'll want to come back. So that was a half.
So you're trying to put it on me? So
no. I was just trying to be like self-deprecating. Like, I'm sure you had a terrible time, but we'd love to have you back. It sounds like,
well, no. If I have a terrible time, I would shout a loud expletive and I'd hang up. I'd make a hang up sound because on Skype, there's no way you can slam down the phone.
And that, also, it would just make that bubbly sound. It would just make that bubbly sound.
Yeah. And because that's, that's what we're missing with, like, the old phones, with new phones. The ability to slam down the phone. And so it's hard to tell when someone's hung up on you. I remember once I was arguing with my girlfriend. This was years ago, but it was still on Skype. Well, I hung up on her because I was mad, and she called me back because she didn't know if I was disconnected or if I hung up on her. So I told her, okay, well, every time from now on I hang up on you, I will shout an expletive first so that you know that I'm angry. Because I can't make, like, Skype should have, like, a slamming down the phone button, and then it actually sounds like a sound of a phone being slammed down.
So instead of this red button with the phone pointed downwards, it should be a red, like, angry face.
Well, no, you'd have the red phone for normal, and there'd be, like, some icons around it. Like, one for slamming it down. One for just leaving it off the hook and walking away and not listening. You can do it. It's not like we had the technology. It's not that hard.
I want interrupters for conversations. Like, if someone says something that just outrages you, that you just – it's the sound of utensils clacking against the plate, like you're getting up out of the dinner table. Or a record scratch. Or I want, like,
like that?
Exactly. Like Thanksgiving dinner, someone says something and just clank.
smash a plate.
That's it, yeah.
The sound of the desk being flipped over.
All right, I want a quarter of every 25 cents from every app of that you sell. So whoever
programs it. I'm not going to program this, but it is a real concern because the little bloop thing just makes light of the anger.
All right, well, we're going to bloop out of here. Thanks again. Dan, you're on Twitter, And that's where most people can be trolled by you. So how can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Twitter at DSZYMBORSKI. If you are Canadian or English for some reason, that is SZYMBORSKI. You can find my work at ESPN.com. You can find weekly chats and projections over at Fangraphs.com. That's spelled like the word fan and the word graphs put together.
And you have a gaming Twitter account, I believe, too. Since
I do, so but I am very poor at using two Twitter accounts with contrasting goals. So my main account is, when it comes down to it, my gaming account. But it's okay, because since I'm getting paid for it, it's official, and I can do that.
Fair enough. And as you don't, if you don't already know, I'm at Every Sixth Day. And Doug?
I am at Moonwalk McFly.
And every week we ask for your Twitter questions, and you can at us, and you can ask us anything, and we'll answer whatever we feel like. We used to answer anything, but now it's whatever I feel like. Or don't. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week.